Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod to go over Michigan State's second round game against the Golden Gophers on essentially their home court, where they won 77-67 to set up a quarterfinal matchup against the Purdue Boilermakers. My family always enjoys tournament because it allows us an opportunity to see Iowa and Michigan State play, and it's all the players we're familiar with. 2 years ago, we saw both our teams make the semifinals, and last year, neither won a game, so it was nice to have at least one of the teams make it. So we have a session that we can be excited about tomorrow. Before we begin, a reminder that next Thursday is the deadline, of course, for the NCAA Bracket Challenge. We're hosting over on Poolhost. So head on over to our contest page at tffinots.com/contests to register for the free bracket pick. Quick shout out to Tim Finnegan, who stopped to say hi. Sorry, Tim, I just lost my wife, so I wasn't able to talk very long, but it's nice to see you. Thanks for stopping to say hi. Also, we sat opposite from the scores table on Wednesday night because there's open seating. And I was just kind of sort of half paying attention to the game. And I looked across at the floor and I saw somebody that I thought was kind of cool. I thought, oh, wow, they've got some Spanish written on the floor. No C. And then some word or something. Not realizing, of course, that it actually, I was looking at everything upside down. So it said marches on. So, but and today we got to ride home on the light rail with people who are doing drugs. So it's been an interesting trip. All right, Rod, let's talk about the game. Michigan State struggled out of the gate, trailed by two, going to half. Malik Hall spent at least over half of that on the bench with two fouls. Minnesota did enough to stay ahead, but never really pulled away. I think they got as much as 7 points, but were never able to stretch it more than that.
Right.
And the second half, Michigan State finally caught them, had a 12-2 run that took the lead and really kind of maintained that for most of the second half, and then they stretched out to 13 and finished base winning by 10. So I think from the second half, a very good game, and I thought the guards played well, certainly the second half. We feel like we've talked about this with a half of good basketball. But they did enough in the first half to stay in contact and allow Malik Hall to stay on the bench and not have to risk him getting a third foul, which he ended up getting quickly in the second half.
Yeah, I think it was a notable game because for the first time in a long, long time, I can't even remember the last time it happened, where all four of Michigan State's guards had good overall games. Now, you know, A.J. Hogard was not good in the first half, but he was lights out in the second.
Yeah, so you fantastic.
His total contribution was great. Tyson Walker struggled with his shot for a lot of the game, but made contributions in other areas, and then when it came down to winning time, they couldn't stop him.
Yeah.
He took over. Jaden Akins, I thought, played one of his best floor games in a while. You know, he was 4 for 6 on the floor, hit the only three-point attempt he took, led MSU in rebounding with 7, and played, I thought, stellar defense.
Oh yeah,
he had two steals, so he had two really impactful strips. But I think even beyond that, he had Max Christie for a lot of that game. And you know, it probably doesn't take much to remember the job that Max Christie.
Yeah,
Cam Christie.
Didn't catch it either.
It doesn't take much to remember the job that Cam Christie did against Michigan State. I think in both games, but definitely the game in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And you know, he did have 11 points, but he didn't really dominate the game and didn't do as much as Minnesota needed him to do. And a lot of that was courtesy of the defense Jaden played. So all those guys I thought were really good. But the guy who gets my nod for the best guard out of the bunch is Trey Holloman.
Yeah.
Trey Holloman had 9 points, didn't miss a shot, 3 for 3 overall, 2 for 2 from three. He did miss one free throw. He split his free throws. Had 4 assists, 2 turnovers, had 2 steals. But all of that doesn't really begin to tell the story of how good he was, particularly in that first half when Michigan State really needed somebody to step up because those other guys weren't quite on track. And he did that. I thought he was fantastic in transition, pushing the ball, throwing the ball ahead. He had a no-look pass on Hall's transition dunk that was fantastic. And I thought defensively he was really, really good. So to me, he's the guy. And it was no accident that he was the guy, the player that Big Ten Network called in to do the post-game interview. He's the guy that got to put Michigan State on their on the bracket in their locker room, which usually that honor goes to the guy that's considered to be, you know, one way or another, the player of the game. And I think he really was, even though the pure numbers might not quite tell you that, but man, he was important.
Yeah, he was great.
You know, and then beyond that, you know, so we say, well, all four guards were good in the same game. MSU got contributions out of everybody played except Mati Sissoko. The only thing Mati did is get a foul call in 1 minute of time. So if you take Mati away, everybody else contributed. You know, even Colin Carr only played 5 minutes. He hit both his free throws, and he had an assist. You know, and then from there, I think the guys who played inside, you know, Xavier Booker was the other guy besides Trey who really kept him afloat early with a quick flurry of offense. And this time it was without any threes.
Yeah.
Some very impressive stuff. I just think he looks more and more comfortable as we go. He also had a couple nice defensive plays. He was credited with 2 steals, and I think that's fair. He was active in trying to guard guys like primarily it was Garcia, but he maybe even had some shifts where he had to guard Payne. And I thought he was active. I thought his length created some problems for Minnesota. And so he was really good. And then, you know, Jackson Kohler, 7 points, 6 rebounds, probably his best game of the year, I would say. This looks increasingly more comfortable in the post, and today he was finishing a little better. The misses he had were, you know, shots from a little bit at the mid-range as opposed to around the rim. He was converting around the rim. Carl Cooper, 3 points, 5 rebounds, and a steal. Not spectacular stuff, just looking at those numbers, but I thought he really played well defensively. And I also thought he had, you know, he's got a rap, and I'm not going to say it's not deserved, for having less than great hands. But he caught a pass, I don't think it was from AJ, but I can't remember for sure, in transition, where he caught it in stride. The catch was tough. To then gather and in one movement finish at the rim in transition was very impressive. And it's the kind of play, frankly, he has not been converting lately. So I think, you know, Malik, obviously, you mentioned being saddled with foul trouble, really hurt Michigan State in the first half. There was a phase of that game in the second, and I don't know if you could see it. He had a spin move where he just, you know, Dawson Garcia was left grasping at air, and Malik let him know, which is not something he always does, but he let. I was actually kind of surprised that he didn't get teed up.
I saw that too, yeah.
Because it was right at him. I mean, and there was an official in the vicinity. I'm glad they let it go. But there was a point in time in that game in the second half where Malik kind of took over for a segment, and Minnesota really couldn't deal with them. So everybody, I mean, how many games have we been able to say that about? That you can look at essentially everybody that played and said, well, they did something that contributed to the win. That's been part of the problem, is you haven't been able to very often get everybody doing that. And that doesn't mean that it was a perfect game, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just that you got positives from every single guy. You go down the list and, well, that guy had, like I just said with Carson, 5 rebounds, good defense, and 1 great play to finish in transition. Yeah, he missed 3 free throws also early in the game, but he did a number of positive things that helped Michigan State win that game. And it was true for everybody who saw the floor. So that was really, really nice to see because, you know, from here on out, that's what they're going to need to do. It's not going to be enough to have 2 guys that are hot. You know, this is the time where you need that.
Absolutely. And, of course, the implications of the game, as we had talked about before, probably didn't need a win to make the NCAA tournament, probably needed a win in order to avoid the play-in.
Yeah.
So that is, I think, out of the question. I think Michigan State is safely in the field. They won't be playing either Thursday or Friday next week. Where and whom is, you know, and what seed is yet to be determined.
Yeah.
So I think we can at least feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's still all up for grabs.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard, honestly. You look at what this game meant, and I think that's the biggest thing. With their metrics and part of what fuels those metrics, of course, are things like the number of tough games you play and the number of wins against good opponents that you have and avoiding the bad losses, all of those things. And the fact is, to say it would be unprecedented would be an understatement. To leave a team with Michigan State's resume on those fronts out of the field. So I'm with you. I think this game, you know, we would have been nervous. Had they lost, we would have said, yeah, we think they're in, but it's probably Dayton. And yet I know in the heart of every Spartan fan, come Sunday at 6 p.m., there would have been a lot of nerves.
Yeah.
You know, and this way, I think by winning this game today, I don't see a scenario where they could be left out. I don't even see a scenario, as you said, where they end up in Dayton. I'd be really, really surprised by that. It seems to me that right now, and I haven't looked at every bracketologist, but to me, it looks like they're on the high end of the 10 line at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to be because, you know, if they were to lose, and we're going to get to Purdue later in this, but if they lose to Purdue, as everyone in the world expects them to, well, that's not a loss that you get dinged for.
Right.
You know?
Maybe rewarded in some ways, too. Who knows?
So, yeah. But this is the interesting philosophical question that comes out of this, so we might as well talk about it now.
Yeah.
And we touched on it when we had Dom on a couple days ago. Do you want to stay on that 10 line, which probably means you got to lose against Purdue, or do you want, if you win against Purdue, you know that it's possible? I would say at that point, it would have to be almost a certainty they would go to a 9, and maybe even an 8 would be in play. Now, Dom seemed to think even a 7 wouldn't be completely
if they got
out of the
next win, I think. Yeah, if they got the
next
game.
Yeah, if they then followed it up by also beating Northwestern or Wisconsin.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, there is, and I've been beating the drum all year that seeding matters less and less with every passing year. Last year, we saw a prime example of it. I suspect that we're probably going to see a similar thing happen here with one caveat. I would say that as the year has gone on, as we've gotten into February, it's clear that 3 teams have separated themselves. I think pretty much anybody in America wants to avoid having Purdue, UConn, or Houston in their path until at least the second, at least the Sweet 16, if not the Elite 8.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want to avoid because those are the 3 teams that have separated. But at the same time, we have to refresh our memories and realize that similar things were thought last year, certainly about Alabama. Purdue obviously was a one seed that everybody thought was great. And we see where that went. But I think that's the dynamic in play for Michigan State. If you knew that you would be an 8 or a 9 in the same region as North Carolina or Tennessee, which seem to be the two most likely teams to claim that fourth available one seed, yeah, you'd probably take that. That wouldn't bother me so much. But, you know, your odds aren't real good that you're going to be in that one region, right? It's much 75% chance that you're going to be in one of the other three.
Yeah.
Where you have a tougher matchup. So it creates an interesting dynamic. But at the same time, I know how Michigan State's operating. You know, it shouldn't even have to be said. They're planning on doing everything they can to win tomorrow, and they'll let the seeding chips fall where they may. But as fans, we get to sit back. So what do you think about that? How do you feel?
I think, you know, I'm going to say the other way to look at this, I think, is to say, what is the value of winning at Purdue? Now, yeah, it moves up your seed line and maybe puts you in a worse matchup in the second round. So it gets you actually an easier opponent in the first round versus, you know, you'll have a harder opponent in the second round, presumably. The other thing, though, I think is if they beat Purdue, I think that I'm trying to think of how it happens. And the way it happens is by a team that really starts clicking and playing really well, playing really good defense, rebounding well. And so I think the value of a victory over Purdue is worth a lot more than maybe what you lose in seeding. And so I think, you know, the momentum, in terms of confidence, and just the way. Yeah. I think there's a lot of value in that. It's impossible to know. You know, the alternative is undefeated, right? But I think, I think you make an argument either way. And so obviously you're not going to throw a game. That's never be the way Michigan State would ever play.
No.
Especially, you know, they don't like the fact they've lost to Purdue for like 4 straight times. And so they want to try and even the score a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, I think, because really you beat Purdue and then, you know, you can, if you win the whole thing, you've won something. And then, yeah, you go into the NCAA tournament. Yep. And, yeah, you beat yourself up a little bit playing hard. But getting going and getting a good flow, you could start seeing this team look a lot different. It'd be perceived differently, and they perceive themselves differently if they get going. I would love Booker and Kohler and Cooper to get a few more, you know, games under their feet, working that new rotation they've got. The more they experience they have, I think the better. And so I think there's a lot of utility to that sort of thing as opposed to just bowing out early. I don't know.
Well, that's all fair. And, you know, Raphael Davis on Big Ten Network made a roughly similar comment about today's game against Minnesota, where he said he felt that Michigan State was likely going to be in regardless, but that the real value he thought was not in so much in cementing a bid, but rather in establishing that confidence and momentum after they've been on a skid for about the past 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a similar kind of thought process that, you know, the real value is in that stuff and not so much how it plays out in seeding, for seeding purposes. I will say this, in the minds of, I think, a lot of Michigan State fans, what this does, though, is it sets up mentally, and only for Michigan State fans and only till Sunday at 6 when the bids are announced, you know, when we see the brackets, because that could blow it all to smithereens. But it does kind of set up the closest thing to a win-win you're ever going to get, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you win it, you're like, hey, we beat Purdue.
Yeah.
And all the things that you just mentioned, you can say with some justification. And if you lose, you say, well, okay, we didn't really want to climb any higher. We're comfortable where we are because we don't think we could get all the way to a 7. So if your only option by climbing is to an 8 or a 9, well, we don't want that. We'd rather stay at a 10. So it does set up that dynamic. I think it's an interesting situation for FSU. The shame of this is, you know, and I haven't gone through all the permutations of what would have happened had Michigan State won the game at Indiana, I assume they would have been the 6th seed, which is where Indiana was.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. But that would have set up, I mean, Michigan State would, if they had played this well, which is a big, you know, assuming things like that this season especially, you go you twist yourself in a knot. But let's assume that they had been a six seed, but they played Penn State as well as they played Minnesota. Then you're talking about, well, hey, you're set up, you know, you're facing Nebraska, I think,
yeah,
tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game that, all credit to Nebraska, they've had a great year, but come on.
It's not Lincoln.
You don't fear, and yeah, it's not Lincoln, and you don't fear Nebraska.
No.
Like, well, that's a game we can win. And, you know, you do that, you're in the semifinals. You know, and then you're really thinking about winning this thing. Now, you know, if they beat Purdue tomorrow, we'll all talk ourselves into, well, we just got to get past either Northwestern or Wisconsin, and then it's a crapshoot, you know, against Illinois or whoever else comes through.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's that loss, and you could pick out any game they lost, but particularly that last one because it was the last game and it was by 1 point. Really did put them in this situation. But again, I look at that seeding stuff, and it's the only seeding thing I care about, is just avoid those three one seeds in a second round game. If you can be on that any other path, I don't care. I don't care if they have to play Carolina or Tennessee in the second round. Yes, those are good teams. I'll take my chances. You know, and anybody below those teams, who cares? You know,
yeah.
You know you're going to be facing, because what do we have nationally this year? We got a bunch of teams, a ton of teams that are capable of playing good basketball on any given day, but are also capable of blowing a tire, just like Michigan State. And so anybody else, I don't know. I don't worry about that. And, of course, that doesn't mean that Michigan State is capable of winning any games in the tournament. We'll have to see. But just in terms of the on paper kind of, and in your mind as you think about playing these teams, are those teams that you know, like we go into the Purdue game, and, again, we're going to talk about this in a few. We know that for Michigan State to beat Purdue, it takes Michigan State likely playing something close to an A game and Purdue – not Purdue yeah. Way down the list. Anybody outside of those top three, I don't think that's true. I think Michigan State's A game can hang with anybody else, regardless of what they do. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
I agree.
We'll see. But anyway.
Yeah, and you know, those one seeds don't make it all the way through oftentimes, and that's because someone beats them, so someone's got to play the game. And you can't avoid play six games in the NCAA tournament without playing anybody who's good and playing well. So
absolutely, but I think this is all fan psychology.
Yes, right, yeah.
You know, where like, much like last year, you know, and I think with this team, not that people would be satisfied, Lord knows that's not true, but if they just repeated what they did last season and got to a Sweet 16 and then got beat, I think given where this team is at, I think at least a fair amount of people would say, okay, that you don't feel great about it because of the preseason expectations, but it staves off the apocalypse talk
yes,
that we've
right.
lived with for much too much of this year, you know? And I'm not even saying all that was unjustified. When I say we've lived with it for much too much, a large part of that is the fact that the team has put themselves there.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, let's talk about let's just go through briefly the game here against Minnesota. We'll begin by the player that needed to be kept in the gutter, brought to you by the Brothers Suggestive Gutters. It is springtime. It's raining. Keep the water away from your house. The best people to do that are the Brothers. You can get a hold of them at our support page at the Final Four is on the schedule.com/support. You can find links whether you're in the east side or the west side of the state. They do fantastic work to repair, replace, clean out your gutters, whatever needs to be done. So a player that needed to keep in the gutter was Dawson Garcia. He played 37 minutes. He was 8-for-15 for the field, 2-for-6 from three. I think he hit his first two and then he missed the next four. He
yep.
was terrible from the free throw line, just 1-for-5. He only had 4 rebounds, 1 assist, a turnover, finished 19 points. He was very good. He was the guy sort of helping Minnesota stay in that game, especially get the lead initially. So it was not a case where Michigan State kept him in the gutter. But again, sort of like in East Lansing, he had good stats, but he wasn't so dominant and just like took over the game. So I think it's, you know, a wash, you know.
I feel the same way. I mean, it was a productive game scoring. He didn't do a bad job shooting the basketball, but there was never really a stretch of that game where, as opposed to some points in the game in East Lansing or even the game in Minneapolis, where you're like, hey, this guy's taking over now.
Yeah.
It never felt that way. And I think Michigan, and the other thing was, you know, Michigan State, I don't think he had any fouls in the first half. He ended the game with four.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State, by rotating those guys on him all day long and keeping people fresh and being physical with him. And later, as that game wore on, I felt that that was part of the reason why Michigan State was able to get so much done at the rim with their guards, is because Payne was in foul trouble. Garcia was eventually in foul trouble, but I think even before that, just got worn down. I mean, you said it, he played 37 minutes. That's a lot of basketball.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was at his best down the stretch. And that's when Michigan State really, you know, kind of gave Minnesota the Heisman and just kept pushing the lead out. You know, eventually got it as high as 13 before it ended at 10. And so I think it was okay. It's hard to say, well, guy scores 19 points and you think you did a good job on him, but I think it was a reasonable job.
Yeah, certainly the concern with once Malik went out is that he's going to start taking over the game, and he never
Absolutely.
Was able to do that. They
Absolutely.
Were able to do just enough with the rotation of the bigs to just keep him in check so that he was, you know, so they could stay in contact. And then, you know, of course, got all the way down to 2 points at halftime, which was, I think, key.
Yeah, he never went on. You know, he's a guy who's fully capable. And you're right, when Hall leaves the floor, you really worry about this, where, you know, maybe in a 3-minute stretch, he goes 4 for 4.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and that never happened.
All right, so then we'll talk about by the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids, the player of the Michigan State who cleans the glass the best. Currently, the score is 6.5 to 6.5. I got to pick first. I picked Malik Hall, who finished with one rebound.
Man.
And you had, who'd you have again?
I had Carson Cooper who finished with five.
Yes, five.
Yeah.
Akins pulls on 7. Kohler with 6. And so, neither of us score. So we'll talk about rebounding in just a second. But just, you know, just a reminder, if you need your windows cleaned, Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids is a great place to go. You can find their contact information on our support page as well at thefinalforce.schedule.com/support. They will, if you're in the Grand Rapids area and you need your windows cleaned, whether it's a house, a business, or high rise, or maybe just a house washed, whatever you need done, they can do it. 15% off, you mentioned rebound when you get your estimate. But, you know, I think it was Hall didn't get the rebounds largely because everybody else was just snatching before he could get to them.
And he wasn't on the floor.
And he wasn't on the floor in the first half, for sure. Yeah.
He only played 21 minutes. So we're talking about, I don't know what, I haven't looked at how many minutes a game Malik is averaging, but I'm going to assume.
Got to be 30.
He played about, I was going to say, he played probably about 10 minutes less than he normally does. So that had something to do with it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's go to the keys of the game, brought to you by Nudge Printing. Nudge Printing is where you can get your Spartan apparel, super comfortable. If you want to look good at the game or in the bar watching the game, make sure you head on over to Nudge Printing at nudgeprinting.com. 20% off if you mention Final Four at the coupon code at checkout. They got huge selection of Michigan State stuff, vintage stuff, current stuff, whatever you need. And it's, again, all super comfortable, high quality stuff. So my family's favorite, you can't go wrong. So the keys of the game, which of course now I'm recording this in a hotel room right now here in Minneapolis. So I'm in an exercise room because I can't find any other place to do it. And my family decided they wanted to sleep. So I got it pulled up here on my phone. So the first key to the game was to play fast. I mean, we could look at just transition and transition points. Michigan State did a great job, 19-6. That's what really kept them afloat. In the, certainly the second half, that's where they sort of took off. So there's 19-6 off of 10 steals. And then, you know, as we always say, you know, when they were playing fast within the half court, they were effective. And when they kind of slowed it down, more so in the first half, they just didn't get a whole lot of good stuff going.
I thought that They scored 44 points in the paint in this game.
Yeah.
And this is something that they hammered on the broadcast, so you wouldn't have seen it. But 30 of those came in the second half. A lot of that was guards.
Yep.
A lot of that was A.J. Hogarth, Tyson Walker, a little bit of Trey Holloman, a little bit of Jaden Akins. The way that they attacked, and I thought they just kept the pressure on Minnesota. That was the key thing. You even in that first half, for take away the first few minutes where they struggled, I would say for at least 30 minutes of they played at the pace they need to. I was really happy that you mentioned 19 points on the break. They did some major damage in transition in this game. They were insistent in looking to try to run, and then they were efficient in finishing those plays. And so I was very, very happy with that. And that's going to be a constant drumbeat for however many more games Michigan State has to play this season. It is so screamingly obvious that the faster they play, which means the more intentional they are in moving the ball and in man movement generally. I mean, you saw it in this game. When the ball swings or they're able to get penetration to force the defense to adjust, it just creates so many better opportunities. Be that a three-point shot that's a better look, a driving opportunity. I mean, there were several of those where just because of the way they moved the ball, you ended up in situations where, let's say, AJ ended up with just a wide open path to the rim.
Yeah.
Because the ball movement was so good. You get Minnesota trying to recover, and eventually, even good defenses, you know, you test them long enough in a possession, somebody is going to fail to recover the way they're supposed to. It's just how it works. And Michigan State was really good in taking advantage of that. So I was very happy with the pace they played at.
Yeah, and that's all with the same centers they've had all season. They're still able to find the spacing, I guess, to get it done. So the second key to the game, feeling extra snarky today because I had drug dealers on the train back. So the second key to the game was defensive rebounding. They did a great job. Minnesota had 5 offensive rebounds on 24 yeah. misses, so a shade over 20% offensive rebounding rate. So they did the job there, and they didn't. I think, you know, for second chance points, it was a 5-2 edge for Michigan State. So basically, no one got much going there, either team.
8-2, Michigan State.
Oh, you know what? I'm looking at just the half.
Yeah. 8-2.
The game, yeah.
So a little bit of an advantage.
Yep.
But here's why that was important. Minnesota shot the ball well.
Yeah.
They shot 50% in this game and 36% from 3. So if you're not rebounding well on the defensive end and a team is shooting that well, you got a major problem. This is why Purdue is as good as they are, to a little bit of a spoiler alert here. It's because they do both of those things. They shoot the ball exceptionally well, and then on top of that, the ones they miss, they very often get a second chance at. So that's what you have to avoid. And Michigan State, I thought, did a really good job. But they were helped out. Look, there's no doubt about that. I think Payne being in some foul trouble, he, if I remember correctly, he had at least one, maybe two offense. He did get 2 in just 15 minutes in this one, but his foul hampered him in this game. And, you know, they also kept Garcia off the offensive board. So it's a good job, because that was a big team. You know, they were talking about it during the broadcast at one point that, and it's, we've talked about this before. It's not just the 4 and the 5 spot. Minnesota is able to play pretty big. I mean, Cam Christie's not a world-beating rebounder, but he's 6'6".
Yeah.
And he's got some length, you know, and they can play a lineup. If they have Carrington in the game, he's 6'4 and strong. So they can, even Mitchell's like 6'3". So they're kind of a bigger team. And to do the job that MSU did, hats off, exactly what they needed to do.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of just along those lines. I was just watching the later game with Jameson Battle. Boy, what would that team would be like if he'd been still on the team. So moving then to the third key to the game was winning the turnover battle. Michigan State certainly won that, the 12-9. And they scored a lot of points off turnovers as well. They had 18-12 edge there, which is, you know, largely fueling their transition. So definitely a win there, which helped fuel the victory.
So Minnesota with 12 turnovers, 10 of them via the steal.
Yeah. And 7 of them from Farrell Payne. Yeah. He's getting brutalized.
Did he have 7, really?
He had 7 turnovers. Yeah, he was stripped like...
You're right.
He barely
right.
played, and he's like...
Yeah.
Every time he had the ball, he's stripped by Jaden.
Yeah. It was another... You look at all these areas, and, you know, Michigan State has an 8-2 edge in second chance points. They're up 18-12 in points off turnovers. You just put those two statistics together, and you've got essentially the margin of victory.
Yep.
You know? So it was really important.
Fourth key to the game was hitting threes, and they definitely hit them well. They shot 63% from three. Just didn't shoot many of them. They were eight for the game, which is fine.
You'd like to have had a little more production from there, obviously. I'm not an advocate of this team going mad bomber, because when they get up into the mid-20s or higher in attempts, it usually means that they're taking some bad shots in there.
Yeah.
And they're also not getting the kind of balance they need to get to make sure all those shots are good ones.
Right.
But 8 is a little extreme. Now, that said, we did this game actually tells you a lot. It kind of goes according to script for Minnesota. Minnesota has not done a great job necessarily in limiting teams having success on a percentage basis against them from three. So the threes they give up, people tend to hit at a pretty good clip, but they don't give up a lot of them. They don't give up a lot of attempts. And you saw it today. I don't know, you were there live. To me, you could see that Minnesota, and again, this is where that length comes in. You know, you had a guy like Mike Mitchell who's probably got, 3 or 4 inches, I would guess, on Tyson Walker. Really doing a good job for most of that game in limiting the kind of looks he had. And it wasn't just him. That was the most obvious example of it. But how did it look to you? Because it really looked to me like you could see the emphasis on being on time, on the perimeter, not letting those shot windows develop. And, you know, then eventually Michigan State was able to make them pay for it by taking the ball to the rim. It took a while to develop, but I think you could really see their defensive game plan pretty easily in action as you watch that game.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what happened. And then but it gave lanes to the, you know,
yeah,
for layups and stuff. And that's what Michigan State started exploiting later. And the fifth and final key to the game was overcoming the home court. It was definitely, you know, I was there obviously, and
yeah,
this
is what I was interested
60%.
In, your impression of how it felt.
So I'll say two things. One is, I think there were quite a few Gopher fans there, but it wasn't like, I was there last year in Chicago, and Northwestern brought just tons of students in to the game. I mean, I think the Ryan family bought lots. The atmosphere was a lot different in Chicago. It was not that hostile. It was pro-Minnesota, but it was like, I don't know. I felt like it was sort of like a 5-12 game where you're the 5 seed, and most people are cheering for the 12, but there's still, you've got a decent amount of your own fans there. It kind of felt like that to me.
Have you been to, I don't know that MSU would have played Indiana, but have you been to an MSU-Purdue game at Indianapolis?
Big
Ten
there.
Tournament?
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
That was much more hostile.
I've been there too, yeah. And obviously there's a huge difference between Purdue fans and Minnesota's, or most of the rest of the league.
Yeah.
But I think that those are the situations where you can really feel that it through television today did not come across as really maybe marginally beyond the norm. But that was about it.
I think
because
that's right.
You the dynamic that you're used to, you know, most years, Michigan State is one of the favorites to win this thing. So in those environments, if they're in kind of a struggle for a while, you'll see the neutrals kind of turn against Michigan State.
Yeah. Oh,
so
sure.
They're used to seeing, you know, an environment that's not always bad. And then on the flip side, Michigan State usually travels really well to these things, particularly in Indianapolis and Chicago, because the alum base in Chicago and the proximity in Indianapolis, they usually have a very good turnout. But yeah, I was curious about how that was going to go. I agree with you. It didn't feel like a real factor to me.
And I would say too, since it was the early game, the Wisconsin game was after, Wisconsin fans really started coming around maybe halftime or in the second half. And so the arena started filling up a little bit more. And I think they're fairly indifferent. In fact, I think my wife was talking to one of them, and they said, "Oh yeah, we would never ever cheer for Minnesota."
Right.
And then they said, "Don't even ask us about Iowa." So
yeah.
So it wasn't very hot. And I'll say this too, I don't remember exactly what it felt like in Chicago, the United Center last year, but this upper deck was largely empty in the. Today in both sessions, and so the attendance is I don't know if it's like half what it was at the United States, maybe probably not quite that much, but it's quite a bit less.
Yeah,
it's quite significant. Yeah. And I think it's just a reflection of the teams and just the location and, you know, the ease of getting here. I mean, it's a great venue and whatever, and the city's fun and stuff, but it's, I mean, they make the money on the TV, they don't make the money on, you know, gate sales, right?
I was just going to say, the sad part is the Big Ten doesn't care.
No, they don't care.
If the lower bowl is pretty full and the ratings are where they need them to be, that's enough.
Yeah.
It's sad, but because I, you know, and Indianapolis obviously does a great job with it. But as you say, even the United Center, attendance is usually pretty good. And I guess I'm not surprised. It's a combination of, you know, and this kind of reflects on what we were just talking about, too. And I think we talked about it in the preview. I think Minnesota fans should be very excited about what Ben Johnson has done this year. But it would be inaccurate to say, hey, he's brought, you know, we're back to the days of Clem Haskins and Jim Dutcher and the town's on fire for the Golden Gophers. That's not where they're at. So that has an effect, too, right? If Minnesota was a one seed or a two seed in this thing, you would probably see a little bit of a different picture.
Yeah. I think, too, the other thing that is a new dynamic in the city of Minneapolis compared to, say, the 80s, there's just way more stuff going on here as far as professional sports teams, too, that they didn't have before. They've got hockey now. They've got basketball.
Very true.
So that's probably going to change things, too. You know, make it, it's a lot harder for them to just draw to, just like, you know, Northwestern drawing in Chicago. I mean, a little different. Obviously, the alumni base is different size. But anyway, that's probably another aspect.
Well, before we wrap it up, though, I want to get back to this light rail thing. So I don't, being pretty familiar with Minneapolis, I know where the Target Center is, and so that's, you know, you're downtown essentially. How far out are you?
Not that far. I mean, it's, you know, it's a couple miles. Our hotel's right off the rail. And so we actually talked to my nephew who works for the Twins now. And he's just getting ready to graduate from U of M, the real U of M, as my wife calls it. Anyway, so we asked him, like, is this rail fine? He's like, oh yeah, it's totally fine. And so it's been, it is mostly fine. I mean, it's especially during the day, it's, you know, getting there and stuff. We've only had like one schizophrenic guy kind of walk around and stuff. And the rail system is sort of like an honor system almost. You just kind of just walk on the train and walk off. So you buy the fares.
A lot of them are.
But you don't have to really pay. It's weird. Just because it's just no other way of doing it that without having a bunch of people. Anyway, at night, it's definitely changes. And so we're coming back at like, you know, 10:30 at night. There's the clientele on the train. It's a lot different. And so we had someone like behind us, like smoking a crack pipe and stuff. It was crazy. I mean, I would say that is not normally the, and there's, you know, food and just junk. It was fine when we first got on the, because they're all the, you know, people, but the people just started getting off. Fortunately, we're not much farther because we just got off. And the night before it was fine. It was not that big a deal. Just tonight was, we just happened to get in the wrong car.
Yeah, so that's interesting because I have not been on there. You know, their light rail was a relatively new thing. I think it's less than a decade old,
probably. Yeah.
And I've not had a chance to ride it. So when you mentioned that, I was kind of curious because, you know, it's a theory of mine that, and I used to see this when I lived in San Francisco, that certain kinds of transportation, and there's no rational reason for this because the cost is the same. But I noticed, for example, that the BART system, which was the underground, you know, rapid train, kind of akin to a subway system,
right,
in San Francisco, had a much, much better atmosphere than the buses or the light rail cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, you know, it costs you the same to ride them. There's no difference, but just the surroundings were different. And that just seemed to have an impact on behavior, for at least that was my observation. And I used to ride those things pretty much every day of my life. So I saw them a lot. But yeah, I don't think of light rail as having those kind of issues, but hey, it's 2024, right?
It's been a good education
hang loose. Yeah.
We only have one more evening coming back and then it should be fine on Saturday and Sunday. But right. It's been convenient getting to the airport and stuff. We didn't have to have a car, so it was kind of nice in that sense. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, so, you know, in many ways, it was really great. We had a great restaurant tonight and stuff. So I love the city, but, you know, we get to see all of the city, we'll say. Let's talk about Purdue briefly. Michigan State, obviously, heading up to, we kind of talked about recently, just a couple weeks ago, they played and lost by 6 to the Boilermakers in West Lafayette. They're still ranked 3rd overall in KenPom, 2nd in the net. They're number 1 in offense, number 20 on defense. They're number 2 in three-point shooting at 41% now. They're 9th in offensive rebounding rate and 11th in free throw attempts or field goal attempts. I can't imagine why they shoot so many free throws. The turnover rate is 126, which is their one weakness. Not terrible, but not great. They shoot free throws pretty well at 72%, so kind of just average. On defense, they don't foul much. They have really good defensive rebounding for, again, obvious reasons. They're 17th ranked there. 65% or 65th against the threes and 67th against the twos. They don't generate a lot of turnovers. They're sub 300 overall in steal rate. And they actually don't block a lot of shots despite having Zach Edey. And they play kind of slow, 207th in length of possession. We definitely saw that when they played them in West Lafayette. Despite teams trying to speed them up and try and play fast against them, 76th. Yeah. So I don't know what more you want to talk about beyond that, except since we just played them.
Well, I do think it's interesting. You know, the Big Ten announced it's all league teams and all defense, and Zach Edey was on the all defense team.
Interesting.
Now, yeah, interesting, because I have zero idea how you can watch 20 Big Ten games and think that. I understand that his size can have an impact in, it's not even just blocking shots, but the shots that don't get taken because he's lurking there. Okay.
Sure.
But this guy can't play him in anything other than drop coverage. How can a guy that can't, I mean, to me, it's the single biggest weakness they've got defensively is that Zach Edey plays for them.
Right.
So it's just bizarre. I was shocked, absolutely shocked to see that. Because I would have no trouble. I think Pharrell Payne makes a bigger defensive impact than Zach Edey. You know?
Yeah.
And I could go down the list and probably find another 4 or 5 centers at least that I like better than that. Anyway,
yeah.
I thought that was interesting, worth noting. Look, we know the deal here. You know, Purdue creates a huge problem for you because they have this guy who is a giant and who finishes well. And then they have a team full of guys who hit threes. That equation was not quite the same way last year. It is now. And so you are faced with a very, very serious dilemma. It's similar to when I think how their team was set up in, say, 17-18, when Michigan State ended up winning that game with Miles' shot at the bat or near the buzzer to beat them. A great game. And Michigan State won that by selling out. They just decided, okay, Isaac Haas is going to go one-on-one, and he's going to get whatever he wants to take, but we are not going to let them shoot uncontested threes. We're just not going to do it. And that was a winning combination, you know. The problem is that Edie, they've had good bigs for a long time, for about a decade. But Edie is at another level, and yeah. So it just exacerbates the problem, right? So that's what you're dealing with. As you pointed out, two weaknesses. They're not a horrible free throw shooting team, but they're not great. They're basically average nationally. They're right about at the median point, somewhere in the 170s, I think. So you could have a game where maybe they don't hit free throws, and that hurts them. In fact, that was kind of what happened in West Lafayette. They were not great at the line. And then turnovers. The problem is, I think, and I've said this a few times this year and last year, the ideal way to play them is not what Michigan State tends to do, because I think the ideal way to play them is you apply more or less constant ball pressure, you try to wear those guards down, and hope that fatigue leads to a lot of mistakes, and we've seen that happen when they've lost at times. And then you also, in combination with that, you just swarm Edie. You don't double him. You send three guys, four guys trying to strip the ball every time he puts it on the floor, you know? Mm-hmm. But you got to be able to recover. Really. Right. Well, that's far easier said than done, because they've got shooters who can really hurt you with that now. But I think that's the basic idea there is you have to be capable of applying pressure to Purdue, I think, to have an optimal chance of beating them. That is not really the way Michigan State chooses to defend. It's not really the way basically anybody outside of, at times, Northwestern chooses to defend in the Big Ten. So that's got a lot to do with why Purdue is as successful as they are, in my opinion. Defensively, you know, they're not going to turn you over, but they just do they handle the basics extremely well. They don't get called for fouls, which is ludicrous at times, absolutely ludicrous, but it happens. I mean, they really have become, they've stepped into the role people used to every year about, well, Indiana under Bob Knight, yeah, but I was thinking more recent vintage, Bo Ryan's Wisconsin teams were, and they really remind me of Purdue, not across the board, but in a general sense, that like Purdue, they were very physical, but they didn't get called for fouls, and it's because their physicality with Wisconsin, it was a lot of their physicality was what they were doing below the waist.
Yeah.
So it was harder for officials to spot. It was still physical and still took its toll on opponents, knocked them off their spots and, you know, wore them down and all that stuff, but they didn't get called for fouls. With Purdue, it's in particular, it's the Zach Edey problem, which the entire Big Ten has spent 3 years talking about. And there's obviously just not a fix. These officials are not going to get dialed in to call it properly. So we got to live with it. But that's a real key for them defensively. They don't put opponents at the line very much. And, you know, they're not elite in terms of stopping opponents' shooting success, but they're very good. They're both categories. They're in the top 70. Against threes and twos. So that's pretty good. And then when you generate as many misses as that will generate and you don't give up offensive rebounds, well, you've got the equation and all of that to have a top 20 defense, which they are.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go through our quick segments. We'll start with the play that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter, brought to you by the Breath of Suggestion Gutters. Last time it was Braden Smith. I assume you still feel the same way. He seemed like the guy who really just, he played all 40 minutes and had, I don't know, did he have 30 points or something? He had a great game against Michigan. It was like almost perfect from three.
He didn't have 30, but Zach Edey was the leading scorer with 32, but he had a great game.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm inclined to say the same thing. We all know Zach Edey's highly likely to lead them in scoring, but I think that game in West Lafayette demonstrated, Braden Smith is the guy that really makes that thing go.
Yeah.
And if, as I talked about, the best approach to me is involves applying more or less consistent ball pressure. And Michigan State just did not make it very hard on Braden Smith
right. In
that game. And it's hard to do, especially at Mackey, because if you're too aggressive, you're going to get whistled.
Yep.
You know it. Neutral floor, okay, better shot in this one. Next week, whoever Purdue plays will get an even better chance, most likely, because you won't have officials that are unwilling to call fouls, or you'll have officials who might let you play more physically against them in terms of ball pressure stuff. But yeah, Braden Smith's the guy who makes it go.
Yeah,
no question.
I think anything you can do to try and make him feel uncomfortable, and because they never did anything that you know, as you mentioned before, you know, make him feel you. And Michigan State certainly did not made themselves felt by Braden Smith.
And we say this. It's a hard.
Oh yeah,
this is not easy. It's a hard thing to do. But if you want to beat this team, I think that's one thing you've got to have on your list is try to find a way to limit that guy to some degree.
And then for the Michigan State player that cleans the glass the best, brought to you by the Squeegee Squad at Grand Rapids. Again, for either the brothers or the Squeegee Squad, you can head over to the support page to find out ways to get an estimate. It's 6.5 to 6.5. This is, well, the second to last game of the season, we'll say, potentially. So you get to pick first. Who are you picking?
Big comeback from Malik Hall.
Yeah, I think that's probably... Now that we've had all these, I mean, Jaden and Cooper and Kohler now, it is really, truly difficult to try and pick who it is. I think it's safe to say Mahdi has pretty much played himself out of the rotation at this point.
Yeah.
I'm going to just go with, I'll go with Cooper, I guess. I'll try and remember. And then let's talk about the five keys of the game, which are strikingly similar to the five keys of the game as they were back in February. Brought to you by Nudge Printing at nudgeprinting.com. Make sure you check out that stuff for Spartan Apparel. So the first is to play fast. And so we saw it was effective against Minnesota. So Michigan State needs to play as fast as they can. And they were unable to do that really against Purdue in West Lafayette.